So happy to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, taking a look today at appraising your collectibles. And our guest, Shirley Bauman, certified personal property appraiser. She's a registered Wisconsin auctioneer as well. She's the owner of Bauman Auction Services. Great to have Shirley back to talk with us about this whole area of collectibles and maybe a little bit about what it takes to become an appraiser. Certainly what kinds of things are hot now and maybe what are not hot, and answer your questions as we move along. You can join us at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. We'd love to hear from you. And Shirley, welcome back.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's great to have you with us. You just got back from a conference in, it was the International Society of Appraisers, wasn't it?
The International Society of Appraisers. This year we met at Nashville, Tennessee, and chose that location so we could be there at the time of the big national Heart of the Country Antiques Show.
Oh.
And people might be wondering, why does an appraiser want to go to an antique show? Don't you see enough? And the point is, we get to see the market, see what's going on in the marketplace, and look at what's selling and what's not and what's hot.
And what's not.
Yeah, so it's a great thing for us to be there and see the market firsthand.
And as you looked around and so forth and has talked to others and just on, in terms of your own work and observation, mm-hmm. what is hot right now and what's not?
Well, what we could see at the Heart of the Country show, which, again, is country. You're not going to find the, you know, 1780s Chippendale furniture there. You're going to find more of the country things there. And we were seeing a lot of folk art going.
Hmm.
The painted pine chests, the whirligigs and weather vanes, and those kinds of things were quite popular. The artworks from what a lot of people call outsider artists or untrained artists, a lot of that was going too. So that's what we were seeing were popular. In general, around here, what we see going a lot lately is paper and a lot of advertising.
Oh,
advertising,
is that right?
Yes.
So old advertisements.
Old advertising. A sale I had in the fall, we had, the party had books and books full of Victorian trade cards. And many of them were from Madison and Wisconsin businesses from the late 1800s to the very early 1900s.
Wow.
And there was quite a demand for those, and there were plenty to go around.
Well, that's pretty cool. We have lots of every line full, so we should just go to the phones here and take a call first from Rachel in Appleton. Hi, Rachel. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was looking at a thrift store, and I found a plate and a bowl. It might be like a serving plate, kind of a rounded oval, a rounded square, and a larger bowl. And the mark on the bottom is in green, and it says Cavitt, C-A-V-I-T-T, Shaw. And it sort of has a motif around the edge that looks sort of like lines, and then also tigers or lions on it. I kind of, and a goldish colored rim around it, and I didn't find much on the internet. I got it just because I liked how it looked. I didn't know if it's something special or something to keep out every day.
Well, I tell you, you're looking at it in the right way. The name, and you said Cavitt's Shaw?
It's Cazette. Is it C-A-Z, I believe, wasn't it, Rachel?
Z like vegetable.
Oh, I'm sorry, Cavitt.
Oh.
C-A-V-I-T-T.
Dash.
Shaw.
S-H-A-W.
Well, S-H-A-W. Okay, so C-A-V-I-T-T.
That is not familiar with me right off the top. And there were a lot of makers, so it's not that surprising. Back home in my library, I have dozens of books that are called Dictionaries of Marks from American makers, European makers, Asian makers, and some of them are, you know, 4 or 5 inches thick, and all they have in there are those trademarks. So,
is that something I might find, like, at the library, a book like that?
Yes, you might. You might find some of them there. And if you don't find enough in the library, bookstores will have more of them as well. And online, if you Google for porcelain marks, pottery, I don't know if it's ironstone or porcelain or whatever you have there, but look for ceramic marks, antique ceramic marks, and you should come up with it with a good amount of research. You'll come up with it.
All right.
Okay, so I may have not found anything because it's not well known.
You were looking, right. Looking in the wrong place.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, Rachel, for calling. Appreciate it. We had an email from Margot. My sisters and I have a number of items from our mother and we wish to have appraised. We're very confused as to how to find someone to do this or how to begin the process in general. The Yellow Pages do not seem like a good place to start, yet we know of no other resource that would help us. What do you suggest?
Well, what I always suggest to people is go ahead and look on the websites of the professional appraisers organizations. And the biggest three are the International Society of Appraisers, which I belong to, the Appraisal Association of America, and Appraisal American Society of Appraisers, ASA, AAA, and ISA are the letters. And on those websites, they usually have Find an Appraiser button, Find an Appraiser, something like that. And you can look and search for appraisers in your area. And it's always a problem for people when they're maybe out in rural areas and not very close to a larger city. So you want to look at that. Sometimes there are very knowledgeable and trained auctioneers who know about antiques, and they may have taken what's called the Graduate Personal Property Appraiser class from National Auctioneers Association. So you can check and ask if they are also trained and knowledgeable there. And actually, it depends on what your needs are. If you're just looking at this to get some kind of idea, maybe, oh, we want to make sure we're dividing these things sort of equally among the family, you might find a local antique dealer who's very knowledgeable. But if you're doing this for estate tax purposes, something of that nature, for official purposes, if it's contested, make sure your appraiser has what's called USPAP, the Universal Standards or Uniform Standards of Professional Appraisal Practice, because the IRS and now the courts more and more are getting to require that.
And those folks are found, well, you'd be one of them.
Yes.
In
you ask the credentials. When you go to the professional organizations, we're required to have that.
Yeah.
And if you're looking for somebody for those appropriate official purposes, then ask them if they have USPAP. And if they go, what? Use what? They don't have it.
Yeah, they don't have it. And so now, what are those three organizations again?
International Society of Appraisers, Appraisers Association of America, and American Society of Appraisers.
Okay, there we go. Let's go to Katie and Delavan next. Hi, Katie.
Hi. Great timing. I inherited many, many years ago. Are you still there?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Things that nobody else in the family wanted.
Okay.
And I have, my great-grandmother was Bulgarian, and she did a rather, a wall hanging it's done on hand-loomed linen, and it's their hand-dyed wool. It's probably close to 100 years old. And I had it museum mounted and framed. And I'm trying to figure out who would take Slavic or Eastern European art that might be interested in this, because nobody in my family is going to want it. It's, you know, pretty large, but it's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And I have been very unfortunate in finding anybody so far. I've tried museums in New York, and they all go, we don't take, you know, Eastern European work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Any ideas?
I don't know where you're located, but you might contact your historical society.
Well, I'm in a really small town.
Okay.
So I could do it maybe in Milwaukee. Chicago had a pretty large Bulgarian community, I know that.
Mm-hmm.
Historical
societies often have, you know, the larger ones have museums now. They do in Madison and Minneapolis, and they bring collections together. And especially with the information that you have about who made it, they may very well welcome a donation like that.
Okay.
And if you do donate it to them, and you can take a tax deduction for it.
Right. Well, then, so that the other thing, I also found my mother's little tiny bib smock that she had made, so I know that's 100 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, I was thinking also a historical society might be interested in that.
Yeah.
Yep, very possibly.
Well, thank you for your great ideas.
All right.
All the time, Larry.
Oh, thanks, Katie. Appreciate it. All right, a little help there. Let's go to Marge in La Crosse. Hi, Marge.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is, my husband has inherited a stamp and coin collection from his father, and it probably goes back to the 1930s. And I'm just wondering, where do we go to get it appraised? And then also, are there any collectors out there for stamps anymore?
I really welcome this question, because a lot of people come to me and they have these things, and I don't do stamps and coins. And they are kind of a separate category from other antiques and collectibles, and you really have to know what you're doing specifically with them and have studied that area. When I have people, I have a private coin collector who will work with me when I get coins in an estate, for example, but he does not put himself out as an appraiser.
Okay.
But the shops around usually will give you appraisal or a name of an appraiser. And I would suggest with coins and stamps that you get more than one, because what's going to happen is you're probably going to walk in and they're going to give you a price. If they like it, they're going to give you a price that they'd be willing to buy it at. And you won't know if that's appropriate or not. So don't sell it to the first party. Go and get somebody else to tell you what they think it's worth, and tell them you want to know what it's worth, that you're not necessarily trying to sell it right now. I know in Madison, a lot of even the smaller shops will refer people to University Coin and Stamp. And again, they do both. And in some places, they're only coins. And they don't do stamps because they're really different. And as far as, are there stamp collectors out there? What I'm reading in the trade publications is that it's just starting in some places to come back around as a hobby of collecting stamps. So I find them hard to sell when I get them at a sale, but I think there's some hope for that hobby to be coming back around and people collecting them again.
There you go.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Pat in Madison, on to you. Hi, Pat.
Hi, good morning. Hey, I have a book from my grandfather. It's an oversized book from 1899. It's the German Army and Navy. It's bilingual, Deutsch and English.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got these gorgeous prints in there that have not faded. I don't know what kind of paint or whatever they were using, but it's just beautiful. And I was wondering where I might go to have someone appraise that.
Okay. Being in the Madison area, you have some options. There's a couple of antique book dealers around. Antiquarian Booksellers is a good place. And they can look at it probably faster than I can give you information faster than I can. I do look at books once in a while. The plates that are in there, those colored plates, they're either lithographs, probably, which is the process of printing based on oil and water don't mix, and it's printed on a stone, a lithograph stone, or they could be hand-tinted etchings or engravings.
Okay.
So it needs to be looked at. It sounds like you might have something nice and possibly valuable, because being bilingual, German and English, and having the military connection. So you've got book collectors and possibly military collectors interested in something like that. Mm-hmm. And for everybody in general, with books, condition is so, so very important. So if you've got it, and sounded like you mentioned those color plates looking really, really sharp and clear, that you probably do have something in good condition.
Condition, yeah.
And also in books, just because they're old doesn't make them valuable. In general, but I think yours would be worth having somebody take a look at because of the subject matter, the color plates, the dates, and all of that.
Thank you very much.
Welcome.
Thanks very much for calling. Shirley Bauman, Certified Personal Property Appraiser, registered Wisconsin auctioneer and owner of Bauman Auction Services. Our guest today, I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking trash or treasure here today on the Ideas Network, appraising your collectibles with Shirley Bauman, auctioneer and appraiser. Great to have her back. She comes by every so often. It's always fun to have her along. Shirley, I know you're participating in an appraisal fair that people might want to get involved in.
I am, and that is this Sunday in Madison, and I'd sure love to meet any of the listeners out there who would like to attend. And I know there's still space available. It's a fundraiser for the Madison Senior Center, and that's where it's located, and it's in the afternoon, starting at noon, I think going until 3:30. But they can find information about how to participate on the website of Madison Senior Center, which is under, you know, they can Google Madison Senior Center. It's under the city of Madison. And we'll be looking at anything. We do have appraisers there also who specialize in coins and watches and jewelry. So it's not only antiques and fine art. We can accommodate those people too this time. But even if any of the listeners come with coins and aren't doing that, I'd love you to say hello to me while you come.
And so, and that's a couple of items, $10 or so. And
yes, it's $10 an item or three for $25. And three items is the limit per person.
Okay, cash or check? And
those details are on the website, yes.
Okay, great. And so, again, it's
Sunday, March 20th.
And it's Madison Senior Center. Okay. Go online and you will find it. Let's go to Nick in Green Bay. Hi, Nick.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've got a Green Bay Packer hat. It's all leather. And there are so many signatures on there from the Packers that you possibly can't put another signature on there. And some of them are from the 95 Super Bowl, and a lot of the Packers are retired, and some of the current ones. And I brought it into a card place. The guy's like, I'll give you $5 for it. That's all it's worth. And I was just wondering what your hypothesis is on the current value. I'm not trying to sell it. It'd be nice to put insurance on there or something. Yeah.
Well, I think he was trying to get a good deal from you.
He's trying to shock me.
Yeah. It all depends on whose signatures are on it. Generally speaking, like a Packer football, a signed football right now is going in the $100 to $125 range. And okay. That's a ball that was not used in a game. So I would think your cap would have it about that same value. If it's got good, clear signatures of, you know, the most important thing in sports collectibles, the most valuable signatures are the Hall of Famers. Okay. And so if you've got Brett Favre, even though some people in Wisconsin aren't happy with him anymore, his signature value did not decrease because of that, because it's based on a national market, not local.
I do have Aaron Rodgers on there.
Aaron Rodgers, great. Yeah. We don't know yet that he's going to be a Hall of Famer, but I wouldn't doubt it. But that's great to have his signature and Favre's probably both on the same cap. And maybe in the future when Aaron Rodgers does become a Hall of Famer, that might increase it even more.
Okay.
All right.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling, Nick. Anita in Gurnee, Illinois. We're on to you now. Hi, Anita.
Hi. I've been having a devil of a time, and I hope perhaps your guest can point me in the right direction, even though it might not be her exact area. I've only been able to find one person that's a document appraiser. I have some really elaborate, and some of them are quite large, certificates from my grandfather that are from 1857 through the early 1900s. And I laid them all out and photographed them all and sent those as digital to the one guy that I could find. And he asked me to pay $800 and some to have them looked at. And, you know, I was very skeptical about that. I kind of felt that if he thought they were worth anything, then he would have said, well, there may be some value here, you know, pay me, I don't know, $200, and then I'll get a cut later if you sell them or something. I don't know how any of that works or how to even to find someone and then how to find out if they're reputable.
Can I ask you where this gentleman was located that you contacted?
Yes, in Florida.
Okay. A lot of people will give either a flat fee or an hourly fee as an appraiser. And I can't tell you how many people we have coming to us wanting us to do our work for nothing. And I know that's not what you did, but I would guess that that right up front, he has that as his fee. And I will tell you that different markets have different fees. What the fees might be in, rural Wisconsin are different than what they're going to be on the coasts in the bigger markets. I do know some other document specialists. Let me ask you what the topic of the documents.
Well, there are lots of personal ones, but the main ones that I'm looking at that are, really, sort of impressive looking.
Mm-hmm.
My grandfather was sort of like the age of my great-grandfather. My grandmother is like a generation younger than him. And so this is going way back. And he came from Ireland through Canada and then was a land speculator for mining rights in Alaska and Montana and, Idaho. And so these are mainly to do with mining rights and land that he bought.
Okay. All right.
I do know I work with a document specialist, a historic document specialist out of the East Coast. And we do work together. What I do is I can look at your documents and I will consult with him on your behalf. If you would like to contact me privately after the show, we could discuss that. But you bring up the great point of how do you know if they're reputable? And again, I encourage people to look at if they are a member of a professional society, because there are ways that you can, they have to uphold a code of ethics and ways that you have that can that you have an avenue to complain to if you are not satisfied and hopefully get some satisfaction. So that is how I recommend to get a reputable person. And again, if you want to contact me private later, I can tell you more about that.
Mm-hmm. And you're online, a website or something
right,
that people can
right.
contact you.
You're right. Either BaumanAuctions.com or HeirloomAppraisal.com, and you'll find a link to my email there. I'm having some work done on my appraisal website, so somebody's been telling me now and again that there's a little problem getting through with that one because they might be working at it and it's at a given time. So don't give up if you don't find it right away.
All right.
Would you mind repeating the first one again? I didn't quite get that.
BaumanAuctions.com.
How do you spell Bauman?
BauMann.
Okay, Bauman. And second word?
Auctions.
Auction services.
Right. But it's BaumanAuctions.com.
Oh, BaumanAuctions.com. Okay.
Thank you so very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot for calling. And we will turn to Judy in Richland Center next. Hi, Judy.
Hi. I have a 11-inch tall aqua, I would call it more green than aqua, glass container that's got club soda on, and the name on it is John G. Epping, and it says established 1863, and it's got Louisville, Kentucky, Lexington. And this thing is heavy. It's very thick glass, and I know it's had a cork in the top because it's got a lip around.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do you have any idea where I might, and it on the bottom it says made in Czechoslovakia.
Okay, a lot of glass was made in Czechoslovakia. That's not uncommon to see that. If it was made in, it usually indicates that if it had those words, made in, and the country of origin in English, means it was after 1921, because that's when they were required to do that.
Okay.
And earlier, also, they had spelled Czechoslovakia as there's a hyphen in there, Slovakia, being a hyphenated word. So I think you've got something from probably the, mid-20s to 30s, maybe, in that range. Colored glass right now is of interest more so than clear glass. I would look up, if I were trying to find out more information, look up that name, manufacturing, if it has any manufacturing. Did you have some advertising? It had some advertising on it that John...
This company is, I think, even still going, but has been established in Europe for 100 a year or more. And looking on this made in, it almost looks like it says Slovia instead of Slovakia. I thought it was Czechoslovakia, but...
Well, Mike, look see if you can look under it under a magnifying glass. Maybe it is that hyphenated word where they used to hyphenate Czechos and Slovakia.
But it would be after 1920.
Probably after 1921 is my guess, yeah. And, you know, that's the heydays of the old corner drug stores and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So that would make sense.
This looks more like it was, it's 10-sided. It's got 10 sides to it, you know. It's a fairly fancy bottle, so.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Right. Thanks a lot for calling. And Shirley in Fall Creek, we're on to you now. Hi, Shirley.
Hi there. I have a little metal pig that was my grandfather's. She was born in 1887 and moved to Midwest from Pennsylvania. It's about an inch and a half long, and it has a tape measure in its stomach, and then you crank, you pull the tape measure out, and you crank with the tail.
Yes.
Oh, that sounds fun.
They are fun. And those are figural tape measures, and they were real popular in around that early 1900 period, late 1800s. And they come in all kinds of shapes, turtles and people and penguins, and you've got the pig there. And it is so cute when that pig tail cranks. They are real collectible, and depending on condition, again, they, I would say with the pig with the tail that cranks is probably in the range, depending, you know, on a lot of things, on maybe $35 to $50.
Somewhere in there.
Yeah. Nice piece.
Thanks for calling. Donna and Hawkins, on to you now. Hi, Donna.
Hello there. I have a little old sewing chair. It's from the 30s. I can't remember the style of the furniture, but it had the little wooden inch slats, and it was always done in a walnut color. It has all original material. It's a little rocker, actually. And nothing has been done to upgrade it, because my grandmother was so very tiny that when nobody else could sit in the chair comfortably.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's in its original condition. And I know that it's from the 30s when that mm-hmm. was very popular. I'm just wondering if it has any value. It's quite unique.
Sure. Sentimental value, of course, is really important in this piece. And sewing chairs, women were expected to not just be lounging around. When they were sitting, they were expected to be doing something, and that's why their chairs were made for working and not just lounging.
A lot of crocheting and
right. Without knowing, again, do you know if it's what wood it is? Maple, oak, cherry.
I think it's walnut.
Walnut. Yep. A lot of items were made out of walnut at that time. My guess is you're talking somewhere in the range of $100 to $150 right now. And it's always hard to say these numbers when we don't see the item.
Sure.
But that's what a lot of the rockers are going for now, because they're not quite as popular as they used to be. They kind of go up and down. And so, if you know, it sounds like that's something that's staying in your family, and that's where I think you'd probably be.
Yeah, best. All right. Thank you very much for calling. We had Daniel in Eau Claire says he thinks a good source for looking up antiques and collectibles is eBay to get a rough estimate of price. Is that a good idea?
eBay can be a good source, but I want to caution people not to just look up one thing that someone is putting up for sale, because they can put any number they want on there. If I use eBay to look up for what might be happening in prices, I log in and I go to completed listings and then look at items that actually sold. If you look at the completed listings, a lot of times you'll see you will see prices in red and green, and the ones in red never sold. So they may have asked too much for their items. And then as you look down, you see, oh, here are the ones in green, and gee, they didn't really go for as much as they were asking. So that's the way I would look for those, not just, you know, look for one or two things that people are asking for prices on.
Good tip. email from Betty. She says, I have a collection of depression glass called Cobalt Blue, the cabbage rose pattern. There are 10 dinner plates, several salad plates, several saucers, and an oblong meat platter. I've heard that cobalt blue and the cabbage rose pattern are more rare than some of the other colors and patterns. Could you comment on its possible worth?
Yes, I think you are right there, and we don't see the cabbage rose pattern as often in the cobalt blue. Cobalt blue we see a lot in modern tone and those patterns, and that's a real kind of a deep blue, almost royal blue, you could say, mm-hmm. you know, flag color blue. And it is popular. Depression glass as a category as a whole is down from what it was. We had quite a bit at some sales last fall, and they didn't go as well as we would have expected, even though they were in pretty hard to find patterns as well, and large sets of them. The serving pieces are always going to be more than the place setting pieces. So your platters, large platter, excellent condition, and that pattern and color might be in the, maybe could be in the $50 to $60 range, mm-hmm. $65, something like that. Whereas a dinner plate might be $10.
Okay.
And then, you know, kind of go and piece it out that way and you'll get an idea. Now, this would probably be for, you know, you want to look, if you're going to keep it, you want to look at replacement value because that's what it would be insured for. So if you go on the internet and look at what could I buy cabbage rose and cobalt blue for, that's about your insurance value because that's what it would take to replace it.
There you go. Let's go to Doug in Mount Horeb. Hi, Doug.
Hi, great show.
Thanks.
Comment and a question. The comment is the woman that called up with the mining certificates. I used to be in the land information business before I retired, and she should take those to the Bureau of Mines and the Geological Survey and see if there's any value from a resource standpoint, and not just an antique standpoint, because if she can show a chain of custody and title, she may actually have a claim to something that's worth mineral rights.
Ah.
Oh, thank you for that.
Yeah, welcome. The other question is, I've had items appraised before individually, and the fees have been reasonable, and it all worked out well. But what do you do when you have a big box of, in this case, jewelry that we inherited, and there's like 60 or 70 pieces in the box? And that's just how it collected itself up over the years from great-grandmothers and great-grandfathers. Can you, like, pay an appraiser a flat fee and say, look, you know, I'll pay you for 2 hours of your time, whatever that might be, you know, in the hundreds of dollars, and just paw through this box for 2 hours and tell me if there's something in there that catches your eye as opposed to paying $15 a piece, you know, for each one of them, and it'll end up costing $5,000 before we even get done.
Yes, and that is an issue, and it comes up often. I had a donation appraisal last week that the family had hundreds and hundreds of DVDs and VHS tapes that they were donating to one of the transplant units so they could see them. And they had someone who was disabled for a long time and they had collected these all. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't going to go through every one of them and we do a sampling that way. But yes, And that's how we keep costs down. We understand that it doesn't make sense to do it any other way. But, yes, you can do that. I do that with people if they want a limit, if they want, you know, I'm always a minimum of an hour. But, you know, however much time they want from me, I go through things. Now, with jewelry, if we're talking about just finding things out that look like they should go further, that's something that, for example, I and probably most appraisers can do. We, you know, have a study that somewhat, but I'm not a gemologist. So if I'd find something, I'd have to say, you know, I have a diamond tester, and that will tell us if it's a real diamond, but mm-hmm. I can't give you a value of that diamond. So then I would have to tell you to take it to a jewelry appraiser, and that's where you're going to do your you know, per piece valuation. So, yes, that's very common way to do things.
Great. Thanks.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. And we have, Deirdre in Milwaukee. Deirdre, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, I have an 18th century rosewood, it's called a Buddhist home altar, It's made out of rosewood, and then there's a burled wood put in it, too. And it's a golden pheasant design carving on one side. I don't think there's anything on the other side. But there's no noticeable metal fasteners, not even glue. And it's very heavy. It probably weighs 100 pounds for a table, like 3 feet by 40 inches. I mean, 4 feet by 40 inches. And I haven't been able to find an appraiser that in this area that would take care of, look at it.
Hmm. You're in the Milwaukee area.
And they said no, because they said there's so many fakes coming from China. And I said, well, I bought this 20 years ago. They weren't bringing in stuff 20 years ago. And it's, you know, not the drop-dead gorgeous. It's really a beautiful piece of carving and wood.
Mm-hmm. There's
we're looking, they're saying Oriental art is hot now.
Mm-hmm. Yes, there is a gentleman in Milwaukee who sometimes appraises on the roadshow that you might contact and see if he is available. Marvin Sokolo?
Marvin
S-O-K-O-V-I-N? Sokolo S-O-K-O-L-O-W, I believe.
Okay.
And if you don't get that, look on the roadshow website. They've got the appraisers' way to contact those appraisers. And I think he would either be able to do that for you or know who in the area could do that for you.
All right. There you
go. Thank you. I appreciate it. Have a great day. It's beautiful.
Thanks.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. And once again, you're going to be participating in an appraisal fair that's coming up?
Sunday afternoon for the Madison Senior Center. Go to the website of Madison Senior Center for all the details, but I'd love to see any of the listeners there.
If you go, be sure to say hello to Shirley.
You bet.
And your website again?
It's BaumanAuctions.com or HeirloomAppraisal.com.
And Bauman with two N's.
Two N's, you bet.
With two N's. Thanks, Shirley.
You bet. Thank you.
We will look forward to having her back again. It's always a lot of fun to hear what she's got to say about your items. I really enjoy it. It's a lot of fun. Coming up, we're going to be turning to the medical professional a bit and talk with you about preventing and treating ACL, anterior cruciate ligament injuries. A lot of them out there. And our guest, Dr. William Clancy. Coming up next on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.